Hi, I'm Milan Ajla.
And I'm Michael Figge.
And you're listening to Globonomics.
More than just money.
Okay, so welcome to the Globonomics podcast. Today we are speaking with an expert in sports business and sales in that respect. And yeah, would you like to introduce a bit about yourself?
Yep. Hello, everyone. I work in sports with Milan, so come to know him quite well. And yeah, just excited to do this podcast, share a little bit of insights into the world of sports, marketing, as well as my time at university. But yeah, just a little bit about me.
That's awesome. Yeah, obviously, looking at your job now, but going back to what you studied at university, were there any keen interests you had like starting college, and what led to your decision to focus on marketing within a business school?
So originally when I went to university, I was kind of deciding between two situations. One, I was going to either become an English teacher or I was going to go into business. This was around grade 12. And so, you know, after I think everyone goes through it, but after talking a bit over it with my parents, I was like, you know, it's probably better if I go into business. If that doesn't work out, I can always fall back to being an English teacher. But I was like, I'll focus on business for now. And I kind of went with like no particular plan in mind. Just went in kind of blind, which I usually wouldn't recommend to most university students. I think it's always good to have like a general idea of what you want to do. I'm not saying that everyone should not, that you can't just go to university and kind of figure out what you want to do. I'm just saying for me, I think it would have benefited a little bit more if I kind of knew what I wanted to do. So I went in there, I was like, I'll study business. I'm not really sure what I'm going to specialize in down the road, but I'll do it for now. And we'll kind of figure it out later. So first 2 years, it's quite broad. Like when you go to business school, I'm not sure how it is at most business schools, but the business school that I went to is very broad the first 2 years. And when I say broad, it's like first year was just, you know, consisted of calculus, English. I think there was a language course as well. So it was basically like taking like a bunch of high school courses the first 2 years, the first year. And so that I was kind of like thrown off a little bit. I was like, okay, this is not what I was expecting in my first year. Second year, it started to focus a little bit more into business, but still very broad. They give you a little bit of taste of everything. So you do an accounting, you two accounting courses, one finance, one marketing, and then a few other various like courses related in the business field. Found out very quickly I wasn't great at accounting or finance. I was humbled, very much so. And so I was like, okay, you know, I like going back to what I was saying earlier, I really like English. I enjoy the creative side of writing. I took a lot of creative writing courses in university. I was like, you know what, if there's one aspect of business I really enjoy, it's marketing. It would probably be marketing. More so because it has that sort of creative freedom compared to, you know, other parts of business such as accounting and finance. I was trying to get away from the numbers as much as I can. I found out though that a lot of marketing is numbers based. A lot of the marketing courses I did take were, you know, data analytic central. So it was like, you know, you gather a bunch of, you know, you make a questionnaire, you gather a bunch of data, you have all of this raw data of various things that people are saying about a topic. And then you have to like clean the data and then try to find some sort of solution using that data and apply that in some sort of marketing application. And so a lot of the stuff was learning how to use different computer programs, lots of numbers. And so I was like, okay, you know, like that's all fun and games, but I was like, what I really, really like doing is sort of like the copywriting stuff, the ad writing side of things. And so I tried to steer more in that direction towards the end of my university career. Worked on a lot of cool projects. Worked on a for my capstone. We worked for a com I'm not sure if I can say the name of the company, but the gist of it was they took I guess you could call it ugly fruit, or they called it peculiar fruit, but another word for it is just ugly fruit. And then what they would do is they would buy it from like a farmer, buy all this ugly fruit, and then package it up and sell it as like a mystery box at a reduced rate, because apparently millions of dollars a year gets thrown away from farmers and supermarkets. Millions of dollars of fruit and vegetables gets thrown away because it's just simply ugly, or it's not appealing to the eye. And so yeah, I got to work on a lot of cool projects like that, and then found my way into sports, did a sports internship. But yeah, that's the general gist of things. Not gonna keep rambling on here, but yeah, that's sort of like the general idea of how I got into marketing.
Good to hear. And was there any specific like courses in within marketing, obviously that being your specialization within school, was there any specific courses that stuck out to you and especially the real world applicability of things that you're learning in a classroom setting, you know?
There was two. There was two courses I can think of off the top of my head, that were really helpful. That marketing applications, or sorry, that I think it was called marketing applications. That was the one where I worked on that ugly fruit company. That was really cool because obviously it was a real company, and so we were basically contracted by them as students to basically come up with a whole marketing plan. And this marketing plan was as broad as it can get. You basically they give you full creative freedom to just reinvent the company, essentially. And so that was really cool. Yeah, there was no boundaries as to what we were allowed to do. And so we pitched a lot of different ideas, name changes. One of the things I found out, so after we did this project, I remember thinking, I was a little bit underwhelmed. I was like, I feel like we didn't put as much effort, or I felt like we didn't reach our like true potential in actually like doing something to this company that would actually benefit them. Turns out though, like I found out like a few years later that they actually took one of our ideas, and it's like one of like their core part of their businesses. Even with the same name and everything, and the same logo that we created for them, but I mean, at the time it was so funny because the person that was the head of the company at the time, she didn't seem. I mean, I don't know. Maybe she's just because that was. Maybe this was just her personality. Maybe she's didn't really like to show emotion. But it seemed like she wasn't a fan of our ideas, to begin with. But I found out late years later that she used some of our ideas. So in that sense, like that course was awesome because we got actual real world experience, which I would say definitely translated into what I do now, and things like that. And then the other one, I think it was called marketing analytics, I think was the course. Really cool. It was a lot more, I would say, in the realm of like consulting. So a lot more, you're given like a lot of data, and it's like, okay, using all these numbers that we've given you, use various formulas to pitch ideas using various data analytics methods. I'm not doing it justice right now by explaining it right now, but I thought it was a very helpful course. A lot of marketing is taking data, like taking just numbers and trying to turn it into something that we can actually use that's useful. Because you're just given, for lack of a better term, we're given a lot of crap. You're given a lot of like crap in terms of numbers, and you have to like somehow make that tangible and beneficial towards, a marketing plan. But yeah, those are the two courses that's around.
That's awesome. And yeah, and moving to your current work right now, the sports business is so obviously it's just a very, very broad term, doesn't really specify to one thing exactly. Beyond just a team and like a given team's operations, like on the playing side, what can you tell us? Is there more dimensions to what the business is, and like more than you would ever imagine, or what do you think?
I think in terms of, so sorry, you're like saying like, is there anything more, is there anything like you wouldn't expect about sports business before going
Or
into
like
it?
greater than the team, how many parts are there to a company that makes up a given sport?
Oh,
That's
tons. If it's the bigger the sports team, the more specialized everything is. So, there's a sales team, and then there's a team that takes care of like, current season ticket members, and there's a team that focuses strictly on marketing. There's just a team that's focusing strictly on fan experience, and then there's a team that's strictly focusing on, building operations and scheduling, and like there's all these like different moving parts that come together to create this product. Like, when we go to like a sports game, you never realize just how much effort, how much is actually coming together to give you this product when you're experiencing it. It's not as simple as, you're sitting in a seat and you're watching whatever sport is unfold in front of you. There's a lot. I mean, even as simple as something as simple as like game presentation, like when they're putting on like those different thing, like different types of interviews during the game, or like sometimes they'll have like a game on top on the Jumbotron that's going on. Like, there's like a lot of thought that goes into that before it actually reaches like the final product, which is something I didn't realize. It's a big machine with a lot of moving parts.
And I guess like something with even like game presentation, like certain partners being shown. I guess every team like in these big sports leagues has obviously has their own partners, but like things like partnerships, how big is that for a given sports team and like one of these top major leagues?
Yeah, it's huge. Obviously, the bigger the market, the more important partnerships are. I think like a good example is I think like the Toronto Maple Leafs. They do really well in partnerships. And it's like one of those very few teams I think can do well in part, like it's just because there's such a big market. It doesn't really matter if the team's doing good or bad. Like, so I think, a lot of teams in any sports league, it's like the better the team is, the easier everything is for, partnership sales, even season ticket sales. Like everything's easier when the team's doing well. But then there's like a few teams that are such big markets. Like I feel like the LA Lakers are probably in that same vein where it's just like it doesn't matter if the team's doing bad or not. They'll always have like a core partnership base that will always advertise with them no matter what.
And yeah, how big is that essentially? Obviously, it's going to be contracts in place, but like that essentially advertising time in terms of marketing, which you studied, how big is that for a given company to have their product or brand shown in a given sports game with all these fans through TV and
I think obviously it's more reserved for like big companies that can pay for it. So, like, I mean, a good example is Rogers. You see Rogers everywhere all over Canada. I think three different arenas have Rogers as their label, but I think simply just because they can afford it, right? Like if they can afford it, they do it. And then that, I mean, something as simple as even that, people still call it GM, like for example, Vancouver, people still call it GM Place. Even after all these years later, where it's been Rogers for Rogers Arena for 10 years, people still call it GM Place to this day, which is very powerful, I guess you could say. But yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, when looking, obviously a big on the sales side is where a lot of time is focused. How big is that and what are the keys to just selling? I know sales is a big thing and sales is obviously an important thing to learn, but looking at whether it's tickets, whatever you're doing, what are the keys to selling and finding success, sorry, there.
I think there's like a few different things. I don't think there's like one specific answer, and I think people have different philosophies when it comes to sales. Like I've heard multiple different takes on it. I know some people think, you know, persistence is like the biggest thing when it comes to sales. It's like, if you're persistent, eventually you'll be able to sell a product. Like, you know what I mean? It doesn't really matter how skilled you are at the sales process, as long as you're committed to trying to sell someone something, you'll be able to get them over the line. And so that's why they'll value someone that works really hard in that sense, try to get things over the line. But then there's like a whole other aspect to it, like how smooth of a talker are you? Like, how good are I remember one of the people that I met on my sales journey, his big thing was like, we need like in the first conversation, ideally you want to get as close to yes or no as you can. Like, you don't want, like, you know what I mean? Like, when you're first establishing contact with somebody and you're trying to sell them something, a lot of times the first conversation is kind of, especially if it's not something that they necessarily want, the first conversation is kind of open-ended. You're kind of like, you're not even necessarily even pitching a product, you're kind of just chatting. But he was saying, like, in that first conversation, like, his big thing was, can I get to yes or no? In that, just that first conversation, because he's like, the closer I can get to yes or no, the more and more I can filter to what they need or what they're looking for, and the better. And so I think that's kind of like the style I try to gravitate towards. Trying to get more from people. Like, a good example is, you know, if there's a lot of these objections, there's a lot of objections that come up in sales. A lot of people will be like, oh, like, I don't know if I can do it. It might be expensive. But there's like certain techniques you can use to try to get around those things. One of my like another fun, like another very common thing that happens in sales is you'll be talking to someone and they'll be kind of dry, let's say. They'll give you a lot of one word answers. The simple one that always I feel like does the trick is just like, tell me more, tell me more. And obviously not everyone like bites on tell me more, but it'll give you more than just, how's your experience? Good. Did you go with anyone in particular? Yes, my mom. Did you buy off Ticketmaster? Yes. Like, a lot of the time, sometimes the conversation would be like that. But like, if you like say, how's your experience? And they're like, it was good. Tell me more. Most people will try to give you like something more than just good. And so a lot of it's just digging, essentially, trying to get as close as yes to no, yes or no in that first conversation.
Yeah, and I guess obviously it differentiates on what you are trying to sell, but in terms of sports, I guess how is it rather than selling a product, selling an experience? How what do you see the main difference there? Because it's not like you're selling a thing that's going to be used over and over. That's like there. It's not something that's actually exists. It's like an experience that you're having. How are you selling that?
Yeah, because I think like the thing with sports is like it's very dependent on, like, your experience can be swayed if a team loses, right? Like, that's a part of the thing. So it's like, we can't guarantee a win or a loss, but sorry, give me one moment. Yeah, we can't guarantee a win or loss, but you know, the one thing we try to guarantee over the phone is like, you'll have, despite a win or a loss, you should have a good experience. We've tried to make, like, for example, GamePress tries to make the game as enjoyable as possible. The co score could be like, you know, 5-0 for the other team, but GamePress tries to do a lot of other things during the game that try to, you know, make the experience fun, like t-shirt tosses and stuff like that. But yeah, it's very important. Another avenue you can take is, you know, sometimes you're selling. Maybe you are trying to sell that like winning experience, right? Like, think, for example, for you, like, can you think of like in a time, like, what's the think about any time you're at an arena? Like, what's the most memorable experience you have at an arena?
I mean, like going to see Boston play game one last year against Florida Panthers, winning game one of the playoffs.
Like, describe that experience.
It was just the atmosphere in the arena and the energy with inside and just the noise. It was just exhilarating. It's like nothing you can really describe. to try to
Yeah.
just.
Yeah, like, and but even like just the way you're explaining it, like you're almost, I can like see what I'm staring at right now, like you're putting yourself back in that seat, like you're visualizing it in your head, right? So it's like, how can I communicate my experience? Like, for example, like you're probably, let's say you're on the phone, like how can I effectively communicate that experience to you to sell you on it, right? Sometimes it's just talking passionately. Or I don't know, like there's like sometimes keywords you can say to like drive people, but you know what I mean? Like in that moment, I can tell you put yourself, you put yourself in that seat in Boston watching that game, which I think is like really powerful.
Yeah, that's awesome. And obviously, cold calling is going to be a big part of most sales jobs. When determining who you're calling, how does a sports team, like a given team, find that target audience? Is it people who've been members in the past with the team, like have lots of season tickets, people have come out to certain games, like do you know what the sort of thing is there? Like, how do you determine who you're calling and who determines that?
I think most teams have, you know, a team that collects data, whether that's an ex-season ticket member or someone who attended a game last year for the first time. There's usually something that ties them towards whatever sports team that we're calling them about. Like I said, whether that's they were an ex-season ticket member or they just attended a game for the first time. I remember I talked to somebody from another team and they were saying like people that even purchased merchandise was like some people that they tried calling, which I thought was interesting. It's like, how do you steer the conversation from you purchased a jersey once to you should buy tickets. But there's various different campaigns that are created for salespeople to call like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And obviously with your marketing background, how do you feel like in your future careers, just saying you decide to want to stay in sports or you move to a different sector, how important is the skills you're going to learn, these people skills, and essentially the art of selling? How important do you foresee that being in your future pursuits?
How important is
Learning how to sell, learning the whole sales strategy going to be in your future.
in future careers? I
Yeah.
mean, like you said, even like the simple thing of cold calling, just learning to talk to people is essential. Obviously, one of the things they teach you is, you know, one of the skills is you want other people talking more than you want yourself talking. Obviously, this podcast, obviously, I'm probably going against the
No,
traditional sales
that's the
method,
point. That's the point.
talking a lot more than I'm listening. But just learning like how to effectively communicate is such a useful skill that not only will benefit you in like a sales aspect, but just with like your colleagues, your bosses. A lot of businesses maintaining relationships. I remember like we had somebody come in university, who had risen to like a really high position in the finance world, and he was telling us that, you know, everyone always tells, or like a common thing in business is like find a mentor, like find somebody that can show you the ropes, and sort of like teach you like whatever it is that you're trying to learn. He's like, I don't think that's necessarily the what you should be striving for. He's like, what you should be trying to find is a sponsor. And we all like looked at her, so like, what do you mean? Like, what's a sponsor? And he was like, a sponsor is basically you want to find somebody that's maybe one level above you, maybe like a manager, who's want like one level above you that you build a good relationship with. And essentially, when he's moving up, he brings you up with him. So it's like when he's moving up to another role, he's like, hey, you know what? Like this guy, he's really good for the role. Let's bring him up. And so on and so forth. And then even if he jumps to like a different company, you can still follow him in that sense. He's like, a lot of my career was just building the right relationships with the right people, and them, you know, bringing me up along with them.
Totally
So.
understand. And that's awesome. And how do sports organizations obviously determine these pricing? Is it based on like how the team's doing? Is it based on what the city's like? And what factors influence these pricing decisions? Obviously, with supply and demand making that market equilibrium for the business, what are going to be the big factors leading to a team determining pricing for certain seats, whether it's for a full season or even a single game?
Yeah, I think you mentioned the first thing that you mentioned there is correct. I think one of the aspects is which city you're in. Depending on the city, it might be a little bit more expensive. Like a good example, another example is like Toronto, expensive city to live in. Lots like kind of like one of the business hubs of Canada. So tickets are probably going to be a little bit, it just like I said, despite however the team is doing, ticket prices are probably going to be a little bit more expensive there. And then I think the second thing is, yeah, team performance. Like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like a random team in the state, like Minnesota Wild. I mean, I'm sure when the team is not doing well, the ticket prices are probably very low.
Or like Arizona or something.
Arizona, yeah, Arizona might be a better example. I don't know Minnesota's actually, I don't know their fan base. So I might just be incorrect here, but Arizona might be a better example. Like, maybe the average person from Arizona isn't a fan of hockey, but is, and so with that being said, they probably have to lower the prices a lot to get people in the building. But as soon as the team starts doing well, that's obviously when they jack up the prices, because it's a product that people want.
Of course. And
Yeah.
that's awesome to hear that you got those insights and how a team does determine the pricing. And obviously what role, I'm not sure if you have a ton of insight on this, does like data analytics play in optimizing ticket sales and maximizing revenue? Is your team like focused on that, trying to maximize revenue each season as we continue to grow within a given organization, or how does data analytics play into it?
Yeah, there's a team that's dedicated entirely towards the analytics side of it. So we have obviously various questionnaires that we throw out to people that have attended the game, just about their experience, and then the I think they call it BI. Most teams have like a business intelligence division, which basically focuses strictly on taking that data and making it palatable for the sales team, for the marketing team, so that we can utilize it to sell more tickets. But every team, I think, has a dedicated business intelligence team.
Awesome. And obviously looking ahead, what with technology being the way it is, everyone's moving from obviously like handheld tickets, paper tickets to being online. Looking ahead to the future, what do you envision the future of sports ticketing sales and revenue generation for an organization becoming? And are there any emerging trends that we should be aware of or that you foresee in the coming years?
I think the big thing is, I think the biggest thing is it probably won't be as easy to resell things, in terms of a fan. I think, yeah, I think the industry is heading towards sort of finding ways to make it harder for people to sell their tickets. A good example is a lot of companies have switched, or a lot of sports teams have switched to like a changing barcode, which changes every 5 minutes. And so it eliminates screenshots and things like that. So I think the direction of sports is sort of heading in, let's try to make this more for people that actually want to experience the game, for fans, rather than, brokers that are kind of focused on just strictly reselling tickets. And so that's sort of like one of the trends that I think is going on in sports. I actually think that's the biggest trend, in all honesty. In terms of other things, nothing that I've seen as of yet. Still pretty new in my sports career, so still learning. But yeah, maybe when I come on, maybe the next time I come on this podcast, I'll have more insights in that matter.
That's awesome. And obviously with just a few minutes left in the meeting remaining, just overall, if you were to tell like a teenager or someone just coming out of high school or college how to end up in a position like you working in sports business, working in sales as well, are there any key things you would provide insight into?
I think one, be coachable. Be coachable because just go in with an open mind. I think everyone's a victim of this, but you kind of go in like confident, cocky, especially when you get like a cool job working for like a cool team. Like, oh yeah, like look at me. I earned this. Like I earned this right to be here. And so like maybe you come in with a little bit of ego. I think it's better to go in with an open attitude. Better to be better to go in with less ego and more coachable. Try to find the best way of articulating this, but I think it just benefits everyone overall. It benefits yourself, obviously, because you're going to learn new things, which you didn't know before, but it also helps the people that are training you as well. They'll definitely like you a lot more. Yeah, it's never fun dealing with someone that thinks they know it all, especially if they're just coming into business for the first time. So I definitely think being coachable is definitely important. And the other thing is to get comfortable, as is like another cliche, but get comfortable with being uncomfortable. First thing I did when I was an intern was the guy, my supervisor at the time. This was when I was an intern in university. I was like, I told him, I was like, I'll be honest with you, I'm not the most outgoing person. I was like, make me as uncomfortable as possible. I was like, just like make me like if there's like a presentation that needs to be done, make me do that. If I have to speak in front of clients, like force me to do that. Even if it means like I might fail or I might look silly, just make me do that. Make me get out of my comfort zone. It's gonna benefit me in the long run. It's gonna benefit you in the long run. Yeah, those are the two biggest things. Be coachable and get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Awesome. And yeah, last question we always do like to ask. Obviously, thank you coming for coming on. Do you have any book recommendations, whether it's about business, marketing, life, fiction, nonfiction? Do you have any book recommendations you'd like to share with the listeners?
One of my favorite books that I recommend, it's called Flow, the Psychology of the Optimal Experience. There's like this big phenomenon, it happens in sports, but it can really happen in any profession. But basically, when someone masters something to the point, like masters a skill so well, they get to a point where they're doing that skill unconsciously. Like their body is just moving without them thinking. And so, like a lot of people will be like, even a lot of athletes, they'll be like in a moment, they'll score a goal and they'll be like, I don't even remember scoring the goal. Like, I don't even remember the moment when I scored the goal. I just remember the cheering afterwards because in that moment, they were so focused on what they were doing. They had mastered their skill to the point where it became unconscious. Like, the skill itself, like, their brain became unconscious. While they were doing it. And so like that was a really cool book to read. It breaks down how to achieve flow, the benefits of getting into a flow state. So that's the book that I would recommend.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks once again for coming on. We really appreciate your time. Thanks for sharing some insights into sports business. And that was the Globonomics podcast for today.